scientists had to be freely distributed. And while I thought that was a good idea, it certainly worked for Internet Explorer and Microsoft, it had to be more than that. It had to be open in its code, open to contributions, open to modifications, open to changes in philosophy and approaches in its use. And so we find that 46% of the people using OJS are using it as a source for existing journals. And that the oldest journal, one of the oldest, perhaps the oldest, but close to the oldest, the South African Medical Journal, continues to print, continues to sell its print copies, but has decided within the last year to make all its electronic content free and to publish it at the same moment that it releases the print. And so the range of mixed models, the range of opportunities and explorations that do only one thing, that do not guarantee open access, but that guarantee an increase in access. And for me, that has become the critical moment. The notion that the efforts we're engaged in are not fixed on a single definition, a single model, but are focused instead on a large and grand principle, access to knowledge. And it was access to knowledge that I, as a teacher, as a school teacher in Sault Ste. Marie, and as a teacher of teachers, and you know what George Bernard Shaw thought of those who taught and those who taught teachers, that I, in fact, was engaged in nothing else but in access to knowledge. And that, in fact, I was a teacher because of the pleasure of having access to knowledge. Let me finish with the stats here. I try to make stats a little more interesting with these anecdotal sidelights, because you want them just straight up on a PowerPoint slide and a table. No, not for me, please. 12% of the people using OJS, 12% of the journals using OJS are brand new, born digital, but only 12%. 18% of the journals, 18% of the journals are through our partnership with INAS. Sue Cummings is here in this room, I hope. Yes, Sue, it's back there. So we formed a partnership with INAS. It's a difficult acronym. It took me years to get right. It sounds kind of like a sting and a kind of combination of awkwardness. It's the International, International Network for the Availability of Scientific Publications. The International Network for Availability of Scientific Publications has been doing workshops on scholarly publishing, has been working in communities, has been negotiating very reduced, 95% in some cases, reduced prices for our libraries in developing countries. INAS is part of the reason why if you go to the University of Ghana in Legon and you ask them how many journals they have, and you look at the shelves, if the power is in, during the period of outage. And you were rather surprised when you're told it's 19,000 journals they have access to now in the University of Ghana. If there's any success story in the open access movement, it is through agencies like INAS that have negotiated those kinds of deals. Agencies like the World Health Organization that organized the Hanari Project. So the idea that the access to knowledge is an issue here, and that 18% of these journals have come through INAS initiatives, including the African Journals Online, which is the first of our collaborations, and Christo Fenton is here. Oh, maybe not. Okay, I'm taking attendance. Okay, I only say that because I first met Christo's mother some years ago. And I'm keeping an eye on African Journals Online changed it, at least for me, in terms of work we've been doing, changed our perspective, our relationship to Africa, and changed, I think, as it were, the profile of African journals as it moved. 230 and then 240 and now 270 journals online. Move them online in a table of contents, some of them in their full text, some of them in their abstracts, and make them globally available. And so the open access movement has suffered to some degree from a center-periphery model where the entire focus has been on, not the entire focus, but a large focus, has been on freeing up, making available the knowledge that is at the center so it can be distributed more freely to the periphery. And one of the important points that Arun, I'm not seeing people here. Arun, are you here? You must be here. No. Okay. Arun, the scholar from Chennai in India, has made one of his articles that I read with my class not too long ago. But that the heyday of Indian science was post-independence in the 50s and 60s. When they won their first Nobel Prize, and when the journals took exactly 3 months to arrive by boat. But what happened in those 3 months when they arrived by boat is that they received a large proportion of the literature for a reasonable fee. And that the 3-month delay that the ships caused did not prevent them from developing a science that was participated and engaged, as it were, on a global level to the point of the Nobel Prize. And that subsequently, in the 80s and 90s, with the increase in price of journals, with the proliferation of titles, they went to a situation where perhaps 10% of the libraries in India have anything like a minimal collection. And with a few outstanding institutions, like the Indian Institute of Science, and Thomas Abraham is here from representing Thomas Thomas Abraham represents, has a very complete library. And ability to offer to open access initiatives and the kind of collaborations that we've been working on. So what we're seeing then, in terms of access, it is both a promise through the internet and a kind of interesting decline, an interesting kind of restriction, an artificial scarcity, if you like, an expression that we learned about recently. And I have a class here from UBC, as I've heard. I'm just doing a little extra sideline lectures on it. Also, in terms of OJS, a number of journals are using us to manage archives. Okay, so that 5% of the journals using OJS are using it to provide a history, as it were, the backstory. And the idea that JSTOR, which provides back issues to year one, to 1665, and that OJS can be used on a much more cheaper basis, can be used, in fact, to provide, as it were, the whole history of a journal, increases the quality, contributes to the depth, allows us to keep, as it were, in life and in mind the history of the ideas that we're working with. And another element that sometimes gets lost in the open access movement is the notion that we are trying to contribute to the quality of knowledge. That it isn't only about free, now, immediately, 6 months, 12 months, 18, 24 months later. It is about how does this access contribute to the quality of knowledge. The journals are using OJS to create archives, using JSTOR is an excellent example of that. The economic model. Let me address that very briefly. Because we have been something of a success and something that we would have hoped and expected. In terms of publishing models, 49%, not 50, not 51. Kevin, you couldn't massage these stats any better than that. You had to come in with 49%, rubbed it into my face, it's actually 48.7. Just like I wouldn't think he cooked the book. Kevin came back with 49% of the journals are using OJS to create open access. You understand my disappointment. 52% would have been fabulous. George Bush can win an entire country at 49%. I'm not satisfied with 49% because in Canada, that's not a majority. In Canada, you need more than 50% of the popular vote here. And in this case, open access. But the encouraging part, just so I wasn't crushed by this, is that 49% immediate open access, 40% are using OJS for delayed access, delayed open access, as we call it. He didn't calculate whether it was 6 or 12 or 18 months, but we're all hoping that it's 6 months and no more. So that 89%, it couldn't be 90%, 89% of the journals using OJS, 1,000 journals, you do the math, are using OJS to create open access, some form of open access, and are using it in combination with traditional models like print, that they are still selling subscriptions around, are using it in relationship to creating archives and putting their back issues online, are using it as a way to start new journals that didn't exist before, and that 11% of the journals are not charging subscriptions. 11% have not yet decided, have yet published their first issue, as it were. And so that we could not find a single journal that was entirely subscription-bound in the entire 1,000 journals using OJS. And this is a really encouraging element to the notion. And even though some, and CJC, I have to come back to you earlier on this, because CJC is one of the delayed open access journals. And so even though the subscription model is working, I assume, there's still a kind of compromise. In this case, entirely legal, in our partnership between the Canadian Centre for Studies and Publishing and the Public Knowledge Project. So this idea then, that the possibility of creating, as it were, a more open and accessible road to knowledge is one that I would argue is about the quality of that knowledge. And the quality of that knowledge is very briefly now. I'm not teaching my class. But the quality of that knowledge is very much dependent on the ability to participate in the review and in the engagement and in the critique and in the taking up and building on that knowledge. And anything that places that on a global basis